Three Sports Guns presents the Brushback Pitches, high and inside.
Usually a 90-mile-an-hour fastball thrown at the batter's head.
The three Gunthers ready to shoot off their opinions on everything sports. The Brushback Pitches.
It's Brushback Pitches podcast presented by Three Sports Guns and Two Gunthers, Blair
Harold,
in partnership with My Retro Radio. Thank you to our on-site producer, Rick Mason. Diving right into it. Of course, we're doing a lot of catching up last week, and so kind of leveling out this week and going back to Purdue basketball, because when we talked last week, Wisconsin had a game against, was it Northwestern?
They lost.
Was that the first one?
Yeah, they lost to Northwestern home last Sunday night, and then they lost to, what, at Michigan?
Michigan, yeah. And so that changed the Big Ten standings a little bit. They came back and beat Maryland, I think either today or yesterday, which is a big win. But I want to talk Purdue basketball. Checked in and out of the Michigan State game, but all reports pops that Purdue handled that game pretty much from the get-go. I mean, it was a little close early on, but Purdue really took control of home and really didn't let that one go. I know we talked about Purdue basketball kind of extensively last week as we caught up because it's been a pretty good season for them. Does the win against Michigan State and the way they won, because Michigan State, I think at that time, was still fourth in the conference, do anything more to solidify what you think they could do, I guess, really in March, because their schedule is not all that tough down the stretch. And we talked about last week how we thought they could run the table, and I feel pretty confident that they actually might do that going into the Big Ten Conference.
I think they can. Right now, they're tied with Wisconsin, but have the tiebreaker. And so I think everything I've seen, Blair, is that Michigan State couldn't handle Swanigan and Haas, and I think they had... Yep. They're two big guys in both games combined for 19 fouls against Purdue. So, you know, this is something we don't normally see, which is a Michigan State team. But at this time of the year, they just look off, and they just look off. I'm not sure what's going on. But as much as I've gone after Painter for coaching, it looks like every button he pushes this year and seems to be working right. And now, whether the Big Ten's up, down, in, out, left, right, Purdue's leading the conference. And I think they're only Purdue's toughest games, I think, at Michigan, and you could debate, you know, how tough that is, but I think they could at least go 3-1, and possibly if they win out, they win the Big Ten and they're number one seed in the tournament.
Who do you think is the biggest challenge in the Big Ten tournament? Is it Wisconsin, or do you think it's Maryland?
Purdue's at Penn State, at Michigan this week, and then they get Indiana at home and at Northwestern. So 3 out of 4 on the road. So I mean, obviously Northwestern probably is not gonna be easy. They never are. Penn State they should beat. And I think they should handle Indiana. I'd say Maryland, but and I think Maryland's a better team than Wisconsin. But I mean, will Maryland be the same when you get them on a neutral court versus at home? We'll see. But I mean, what it looks like to me, boys, is if Purdue plays their game because they have Swanigan, big prop to me, Big Ten Player of the Year, and should be at least second team All American. As long as and then 3-point shooting has steadied out, I think if they play their game, they got a chance to win this and go in. Well, it's hard pressed to see the NCAA, any of the committee, giving Purdue a third seed, a fourth maybe, but you take what you could take, I guess, at this point.
Well, I mean, I know it's hard because you don't get especially Purdue's not conference really. They lost to the two best teams, which were, of course, Villanova and Louisville, so it's kind of hard-pressed to compare because they just don't have the non-conference resume to really go, okay, well, let's take a look at some of the better teams. But, I mean, what do you think? Because you just said Purdue plays their game and people can't deal with it, even if they are, because I agree with you, I think it's a 3-seed at best, and they probably need a little bit of help to get that because, obviously, it's nice to be sitting on top of the standings, but Wisconsin getting upset twice this week didn't do the Big Ten any favors as well because we talked about it last week, the conference is down as a whole. I know you talked about guard play last week, but having a player like Swanigan who just seems to do his thing and no one really has an answer, and then of course you have Haas who's coming off the bench, but obviously how many teams really have a legitimate 7-footer? What does it stack up when you go into the tournament having someone like Swanigan who teams just don't seem to have an answer for?
You have an advantage. I mean, that might be the understatement of the podcast, but I mean, it's true. And then he had 25 points, 15 rebounds yesterday.
5 assists, too.
Haas had 18 points, so you got 42 of your 80 points out of the post. You know, you were 27-53 from the field, 3-point or 5 for 15, and Edwards took 5, 3 from Matthias. It looks like to me that you focus to where you realize you got to pound the ball inside, and then that's your advantage, and it's just It's the only thing I don't really understand is it just doesn't seem like teams are playing zone against this Purdue team, and I would play zone all day. Edwards 1 for 4, Vince Edwards 5 out of 11, Mathias 2 for 5, PJ Thompson 1 for 4 from the field, Klein 1 for 2. I mean, you know, so obviously, and Spike Albrecht was 2 for 2. Obviously, you figured out this is you're going inside out. But I mean, the one question I had is if somebody throws a zone at this team, how are they going to react? Because, you know, right now you're relying upon Swanigan, and I think, you know, will you stay with this lineup? Will you try to freak out and put Haas? I don't know. That's the big question. I think Northwestern plays man-to-man. I'm not sure the other teams, but I think the big question is can you handle the zone? Because zones will be coming, whether it's going to be in the Big Ten tournament. Certainly you'll see them in the NCAA tournament.
Right. Well, how do you feel about that? Because I think that the big thing that Swanigan, obviously there's a lot of things, but I think the one thing that I think is kind of forgotten about his game is that he's a very good passer as well. I know that he has had some games, especially this season, where the turnovers have been a bit of a problem. But I think that because of his ability to obviously play in the post and handle himself just fine, but also if you were to put Haas in and then do like a Swanigan at the free throw line is something that I think we can agree, right, would be a devastating matchup right there, because he can shoot, he's got a decent stroke for a big, and he's a good passer. So I feel like you're right, we will see zones, but do you feel confident that Swanigan, with the ball in his hands, is able to do a little bit to disrupt zone defenses?
I think so. It's just that you need to make sure your guards, and I don't think really Blair P.J. Thompson is a really good outside shooter. I wouldn't characterize him as that. That comes down to Mathias and Klein and Edwards. But, I mean, as long as you know you're creative enough, you should be able to break a zone down. You just have to be patient. And that doesn't mean that zones want you to take the long jump shots. You don't have to. You just have to be patient and work the ball around. And, you know, and what you do is continue to look for Swanigan. You flash him across the free throw line, if you get somebody there, then you have somebody running the baseline. I think you could still beat a zone. You just have to be a little bit more patient. So I think based upon what we're seeing, you would at least think this year that Purdue's chances of success against the zone would be better than what you've seen in the past.
Something I'd like to see, this is more just a thought as opposed to a question, and obviously feel free to comment on it, that I don't think Purdue's done a lot, is because we've talked about this, Edwards being such an X factor, and he's climbing up the list of freshman scoring at Purdue's. I think something that would be interesting to see that I don't think they've done a lot of is to see some pick and roll between Carson Edwards and Swanigan. I think that would be something that I don't know how teams would be able to handle that. I'm assuming Swanigan could do it. I just haven't seen a lot of it. And I think that's something that come March could be something that would be a huge advantage.
I don't think that's the Purdue offense, Blair. I mean, I understand what you're saying. I just think that they pass the ball around, look for Swanigan and go inside out. I mean, I to me, if they were going to do it, they would have did it by now, because I don't think you'd want to try to make that work at this point when you're trying to win a Big Ten. I think you would have worked on that offense in pre-Big Ten when you didn't really play anybody. But so I doubt that will happen, but we'll see.
Okay, let's talk hockey. We didn't get into that last week. What are we? Same spot as NBA, right? About 3/4 of the way through the regular season?
Yeah, they're about the same.
So what we got here, Pops? I know Minnesota's having still a pretty good season.
Minnesota, Blair, still leading the division. They are 39 wins, 13 losses, 6 overtime losses. They have 84 points. The Hawks are 35-18-5. They have 75 points. It's 58 games played for Minnesota. Actually, it looks like 58 games played. Yes, 58. So they've caught up as far as number of games, because the Hawks had, I don't know if you realize this, and I forgot about it, this week was their bye week. So they went from Saturday to Saturday without a game.
Uh-huh.
And then they played Edmonton. But the Hawks, it doesn't look like they're going to be able to catch Minnesota. So right now you're looking at, you're 8 points up on St. Louis. So you're looking at home ice for the first round with playing St. Louis. Then you're looking to have to play Minnesota. Then after that, it's either San Jose or Edmonton. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, the thing with Minnesota, I like Dubnyk, the goaltender. He's having a great year. They have a bunch of what I would call no-name guys just having really good seasons that most hockey are not, you know, people that really aren't into it, but are really, really up to snuff as to how good of a season they're having. But I'm just not for sure if this Minnesota success is sustainable, because we've seen this before with teams. They play like have Dallas, great regular seasons.
Or well, Colorado a couple
2 years
ago.
Washington in a number of years. And Washington's running away with the President's Trophy.
They have again.
Well, granted, I mean, they're just a hair over Minnesota. But, you know, it's day and night. So we'll see. And, you know, I guess you probably don't know this, but Bruce Boudreaux, remember him of the Anaheim Ducks coach?
Yes.
He's coaching Minnesota.
Right.
So I don't know how many division titles Boudreaux won with the Clucks, and then when they got into playoffs, what happened?
Right. Well, I mean, you started the preference off because we've seen this any number of seasons we just mentioned because it was Dallas. It's been Dallas a couple years, right, because they just had such a potent offense, and then they've got knocked out by some more physical teams. And, of course, Colorado had that monster season. Was that 2 years ago? And yes. Didn't they lose in the first round?
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, are you saying that you think that the Hawks can get to the conference finals just based on kind of experience?
I think it's possible. I mean, what we've seen in the past is that we've seen Bowman go out and make trades, and then you get rid of young kids and or draft picks. And everything I've read, Blair, suggests that this might not necessarily happen this year simply because, I mean, they literally have like $1.5 million over the salary cap. And while they would like to be able to make a move, I don't know if they're going to. So they might just rely upon the kids. They're playing pretty well. Obviously, they had probably 3 months ago or 2.5 months ago, they were right there for the division lead, and then Minnesota got hot and took it over, and the Hawks have just stayed where they are. I think it's possible, but the St. Louis series is not going to be easy. It never is.
Right.
And the Hawks are like 1-4. I think they're 1-4 against Minnesota this year. I think it's possible, but it's not as clear cut as we've seen it maybe 2 or 3 years ago.
Do you think this Blackhawks team is in a better position to make a run than last year's?
Yeah, because I think when you went and got Ladd, I really think that you probably deluded yourself into thinking that it was going to work. And it just never, when you brought Ladd in, it never seemed like it gelled, did it? It never seemed like that team that everybody was predicted, you know, with all the players, with the lineups and whatnot. It just never worked out.
Yeah, he was a huge get. Obviously, just look at the contract he got this past offseason, and you thought that was going to be the huge punch in the arm. And yeah, you're right. It just didn't seem to do a whole lot at all. Didn't he end up getting shuffling down the lines? He was supposed to be the answer at the top line, and then it just didn't work.
Right. Now, yeah, they shuffled him around because Hossa was really doing next to nothing last year. So Quenneville didn't really stand for that, so he just kept throwing any lineup against the wall. I mean, they ended up going to Kane and Taze fairly early to get you kind of back in the series. You're losing 7 games, and then you're out. So I think the one thing about this year is that they've got this lineup, Blair. They're running with it, and you know, I think now obviously kids are going to be playing the playoffs for the first time in a while, so I mean you could be caught up in that, but I think you probably have a better chance of it because the kids have been almost gone through this. Hartman's having a really good year. He's got 14 goals, 10 assists. I'm guessing most people probably really wouldn't know much about him.
Right. He's been a perpetual prospect for a while, too, hasn't he?
Yeah, Hinostrosa's played well. Panic has like 15 goals. You know, I don't think anybody would have thought of that. You got some of the young kids on the defensive end. They're playing fairly well. Schmaltz is. Rand Riemsdyk has picked it up. So I think, provided that they don't let the pressure or the playoffs get to them, the Hawks do have a chance to get past St. Louis, because St. Louis is having all sorts of issues with their goalies and ended up firing their coach, and they went with a former Minnesota coach, and it's kind of giving them a bump up. I don't know how long that's going to last, but the Hawks should beat the Blues. Then it comes down to likely playing Minnesota, and can you beat them? Because like I said, I think the Hawks are 1-4 against Minnesota.
Right, so reset this for me, because I know that obviously throughout the entire season they changed, but what are the lines right now?
Well, the top line, Blair, has really bounced around because Taze is there, and he's just not having one of his better years. But that's because Hosu has been on the top line. He's not been on the top line. Panic has been on the top line. He's been bounced around. So you've thrown all sorts of different combinations up at the top line. So, I mean, that's really affected Jonathan Taze, and that was the logic and thinking that the Hawks are going to need to go out and get somebody, you know, in order to pair with Taze to get Taze going. But, it just doesn't look like that's going to happen. The second line, you know.
Right.
That's the line that's I think Anisimov has 17 or 18 goals. Panarin has 16, 17 goals. And I think Kane is down on goals. But his playmaking is there, so, you know, you live with that. The third line, Hartman and Hinostroza have generally been playing on that, and then it's just bouncing around. Now, Hartman has played really well. I didn't really think that they were going to get out of them what they got out of him. 14 goals, 10 assists, I mean, you take that in a minute.
Yeah.
And Hinostroza's played pretty well, too. And then after that, they bounce around. Tanner Carroll's been there. And I think you're going with that. And Simos leading the team with 20. Hossa has 20 goals, but he got a lot of those early. Kane 19, Panarin 19, and Panic is on the top line. Blair with 15, and Hartman has 14. After that, you know, the fourth line is largely Kruger, Desjardins, and Rasmussen, and it's just, you know, you're not. That's basically always been the checking line. It's
right.
Worked out. But the offense is either the second line and Hartman, Hinostroza, or Taze or Hossa. And that's really all you're scoring. And so this is not a typical deep team. On a defensive side, you're seeing a lot more Michael Kempney and Gustav Forsling playing on the third line. And it's worked out fairly well. It's giving you some speed. Not necessarily some size, but it's giving you some speed, and it's just the only thing lacking is the experience. But I think it's been Campbell and Keith on the top line, and then you've got Seabrook and Jarmelson, and then you're looking at Van Riemsdyk, and it's either going to be Forsling or Kempney, and sometimes Roosevelt. So I mean, that's your lines, and it's just you're rotating kids based on matchups on the third line and the fourth line. And then you're also kind of throwing things around on the top line. But generally, it's been Hossa, Panic, and Taze on the top line. Just not really working out like you'd like. And then it's just after that, it's just mix and match on the fourth line.
So do you think that this is getting back to those Hawks teams that had, I know maybe not necessarily star power, but the depth where at any given game in a playoff in any given round, just because, you know, you have the proven commodities, but you could also see some of these kids who could have, you know, Hartman could have a big round, and then the next round, maybe you see it out of somebody else? Or do you think that it's just too young that you're not necessarily expecting that?
If you maintain this group, and I don't know how well you're going to be able to do that because of what you're paying Panic next year, but just let's assume that you could do most of it. I think maybe in another year or two. But you're still fighting an uphill battle with a salary cap to the extent that you're going to have to. Campbell will not be back because you can't afford him.
Right.
And unfortunately, there's a situation with Ryan Hartman. If they don't protect Ryan Hartman from the expansion draft, they could lose him. And they're going to have to protect him now. If you lose Hartman, you got a problem. So, I mean, I don't think this team is deep enough this year at this point. I mean, I would feel a lot better if you could go out and get a veteran. Put him on the top line, move Panic down with Hartman and maybe Hinostroza. I'd feel a little bit better about that because Panic's more of a veteran. But at this point, I think for a series or two, I just don't know if they could sustain it for an entire playoff run. I just think that if you could maintain this group and maybe add one or two pieces, that DeBrincat, that kid down in the minors who scored 50 goals again, should be up next year at some point. And I think he could really, really give this team an offensive punch that they're lacking on the top line or third line. But at this point, I think it's a little bit too early to say this team is what they were in 13, is just four lines, you run them out there. I think there's still a work in progress.
Okay, so then who are the favorites for you out of the West at this point?
Well, because they have Dubnyk, the goaltender who's having statistically the best season, I think you'd have to say Minnesota. Hawks have to be somewhat of a favorite just because they have the experience. But, again, we're talking about youth is a problem in certain aspects. And I think San Jose's proving, Blair, that they are not necessarily a one-year wonder. They're leading the Pacific Division. Edmonton has come on largely because of Connor McDavid is leading the NHL scoring. I just don't know. Again, nice story. I just don't know if it's sustainable in the playoffs. Anaheim is right behind Edmonton. The team, I'd hate to say this, like I'm making this my yearly prediction, but the Kings should have Jonathan Quick back, who's missed basically the entire year. They should have him back in a month. They could get hot, but I think it's going to come down to Minnesota and San Jose. Or Minnesota, Chicago versus San Jose, I think. And then who do you like there? At this point, I think I'd have to favor San Jose because they made the run last year.
Right, and then who do you like out of the East? I know we haven't obviously focused a lot more on the West with the Hawks, but who are the favorites right now out of the East for you?
Well, it's pretty okay. Washington is running away, not running away, but they're having a hell of a year, and then Pittsburgh is right behind them. Until Washington does anything slash something in the playoffs, but I'm going to say Pittsburgh, even though that would be Pittsburgh at Washington. I don't know if you know what happened at Montreal, but Claude Julien was the coach of Boston. He got fired. About a week after he got fired, Montreal, which is leading their division, fired their coach and hired Claude Julien. You don't hear it very often, a team that's leading their division fires their coach, but we saw it in the NHL about a week ago. I don't know what to make of that. I think that Montreal has obviously Carey Price. He hasn't been playing that well. Ottawa has gotten hot. They're only 2 points behind them. I think it's Pittsburgh's conference to lose.
Okay. Is there anybody else I know? Because it seemed, what happened to Tampa? Because obviously we had that a couple years ago, and then even last year they made it to the conference finals hurt. What's going on with them?
But I don't know if Bishop has really kind of had a lackluster year, and it's bad for him because he goes to a free agency. So they've had to play that Valesky or whatever it is. I think it's going to be their future, but I think it's really hurt them. I don't know if they even make the playoffs this year. They have a lot of free agent decisions they're going to have to make. One of them is they're probably going to let Bishop walk. So, I mean, it's disappointing. Florida's getting hot. Ottawa's gotten hot. I don't know what that means. I just think that Pittsburgh, with the experience, Sidney Crosby's playing out of his mind. And I think they come out. Now, Columbus is close. I mean, you got Pittsburgh is 5 points behind Washington. Columbus is only a point behind them. And the Rangers are only 3 points behind Pittsburgh. They're in fourth. The Rangers are in fourth. Pittsburgh is in second. So it's a very close division. I think if anybody's going to win that, it's going to come out of that, the Metropolitan Division, because it's so bunched together. I mean, your top 4 point getters all come out of that division because Montreal has 70, and they would be in fifth place in that division. They're leading the other division. So I think it's Pittsburgh's to lose. I mean, you know, the trade deadline's coming. I just don't know if that's going to make any difference with Washington. I just think that they're going to have to do it. And until they do it, I think Pittsburgh, who won it last year, has to be the favorite to come out of the East.
Okay. We'll follow that. Get caught up on hockey. I want to talk NFL because obviously, this will be an ongoing topic for next several weeks as we get ready for the draft and stuff. But obviously, there's some huge questions, I think, already. And just starting with the Bears, I think the first question facing them is what do you think they're doing with Jeffrey?
If it was my decision, and you and I have gone back and forth on this, whereas you can call me whatever you want to call me, I'd let him walk. But I don't know. I mean, I think you really, before you start with Jeffrey, you need to start with Garoppolo. Because it seems like Garoppolo to the Bears has gained some traction to the point that, and I know there's other teams in there, but I think that's the thinking. Just I'm guessing because he's from Eastern Illinois, that seems like a fit. And then you get into the question, do you give up your number three pick to get Garoppolo? And my answer is no. Okay. So I think before you start with Jeffrey.
That was the second question, Pops. Jumping the gun here.
Well, I think Garoppolo is the top subject. But if it's, the problem is with Jeffrey Blair is you're going to have to pay him, what, $15 million then average for a wide receiver, I think?
Something like that.
He played well when he had Marshall there, and he played well when Marshall was hurt. But are you willing to pay $15 million for a guy who just can't stay on the field? And I know the Bears have all sorts of holes, and you got to pay somebody, and they have like $55 million available cap room, and they'll have more when they release Cutler. I'm not inclined to want to pay him that.
Well, here's the thought process. I know what if you franchise him for another year? I know it's a big chunk of change.
Yeah, I think that makes it money more, right? Like, I don't remember.
Well, yeah, because he was franchised already. So I think the way that franchise works, I think it's the top 10 of that position. I think if you franchise him the second year, it's the top 5.
Franchise is top 5.
Pretty sure. Whatever. It'll be more this year, and I know that they have tons of holes, but I mean, I don't know, because when he's healthy, what do you think he is? Because I think he's shown in the glimpses when he's healthy that he's a number one receiver. The problem is he just can't stay on the field.
I guess he's a number one player. I don't know. I mean, it just seems like since the last 2 years have been a blur, he's not really been on the field. And I think that if you're going to, before you pay Jeffrey, I would almost let him walk. You probably get a comp pick. Granted, it won't be this year's draft, it'll be next year's draft. And if you really need to figure out what the hell you got in Kevin White. He's not done anything either. I mean, you got these two, you spent a first and a second on these two guys, and in the last 2 years, they've done nothing. It's not helped the team. I just think that I would not get in a bidding war for him. Now, you want me to predict what the Bears are doing? I don't have a clue. I think they'll sign him just because they're going to say, well, we got to pay somebody, but I think I'd rather spend the money elsewhere.
I think you got to franchise it because I think in the least, because obviously you got to find a new quarterback, and your quarterback's going to be successful if you give him more weapons. I understand the trepidation for letting him walk, and if that's the decision they go with, it's not one that I'm really going to be able to argue against because I'm on that same side of the fence, but I think you got to franchise him again and keep him for one more season. I think that's what they got to do. For Garoppolo, I mean, how do you feel about that? Because obviously we're coming off the Osweiler thing, and that was a disaster. Garoppolo played even less games, and I've seen arguments where people say that when he was in that Belichick didn't have to game plan to avoid him. They game plan like they normally would, and he was successful. But we've also seen quarterbacks, well, actually, I think just players in general that leave the Patriots system and then they don't produce. I mean, Matt Castle comes to mind, and I think we would agree that obviously Garoppolo has more talent than Castle does. But, I mean, you got to – where do you stand on this, I guess, is the question that I would start with when it comes to Garoppolo. Is he a starting quarterback?
I don't know, Blair. I mean, if I had the answer to that, you and I could stop doing that and we could run some NFL teams, don't you think? If you and I had a crystal ball to say...
They give plenty of other people chances who don't seem to be able to figure out things.
I really don't know, Blair. I mean, he's played... I think they said that he played a game and a half. And this... There's too many times... Kevin Cobb's another name that Philadelphia fleeced Arizona into giving all sorts of money.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I've seen people argue, look, if he was in the draft, would he be the top quarterback? I don't really know if I know that either, I guess. And people are arguing, okay, if you think he's a franchise quarterback and you think he'd be the top quarterback, then you give him up as your number one pick. Here's the problem I have with that, Blair. If he was a top draft pick, he would have a managed salary because of the rookie pay scale. The problem is, with him being a free agent and him going to a starter, he's going to want $15 million, where normally you'd have to only pay him, what, I don't know, $6-7 million.
That's next year. He still has 1 year control left.
Okay, but you're going to have to, if you're going to trade a draft pick first or second, then you're going to commit to him, correct?
I mean, I agree. I'm just saying that he's not a free agent this year.
All right, but that contract is coming. Is what I'm saying is you're not getting the people's argument is that if he was the number one draft pick this year, you would take him and you'd take him as your number one draft pick. I understand that logic, but the problem is that when you sign this guy to a contract, whether it's this year, which you might, or it's next year, you're going to end up paying him 5 and 70 or 80 Osweiler like. And what are you going to do if he ends up being a flop and then you got that contract on your hands? Therefore, I don't think I trade a number one pick. I probably trade a 2. And something
else. Oh, I'm
absolutely
not trading the 3rd overall.
No, but I've heard people argue that logic, and I think it's flawed because of a variety of reasons, but I think it's the money as much as anything else for me. I don't know, but I mean, you've got holes everywhere. And the other thing is, if you trade for Garoppolo, don't you get the sense that Fox's time here in Chicago is limited? Then you're going to get that, the coordinator, who is it, the guy that they're had last year, Dogan's Lowell.
Oh, Yeah.
Okay, what do we think about that guy?
Well, I don't think he should have a job, clearly.
Right.
I mean, so, obviously there's talent deficits, but he wasn't the answer.
No, but I mean, what I'm saying is you're going to trust this quarterback with this administration? I mean, the only thing there's so many questions with the Bears right now. I just don't know. I mean, I know you probably don't want to whack a coach after 2 years, but what the hell has Fox and his team done to suggest that he's worth keeping? And I think the one thing that we thought, now granted, they haven't parted with Fazzy or Vic Fangio, but that has not worked out at all. We thought that would be the strong point of this, with the coaching. I just have questions about how long Fox is going to be there in relation to Garoppolo, which means that's why I don't trade him a number one. I'll go number two is what I'm trying to say in a long-winded way. And then just, you know, go from there.
I agree that the third overall pick is off the table. I'm not trading for Garoppolo. The second round pick, which I would assume it's going to take more than that. But I don't know why the Patriots wouldn't be interested in that, because odds are they're not going to draft at 32 anyway to begin with. So the second pick, which would be like 35th, is probably where they'd like to draft first anyway. So I agree with you. When it comes to coaching, I think that. If you're traded, well, either if you're getting a young quarterback this year, then you better put a coaching staff in place that you're comfortable with for the next handful of years, because it's the worst thing you can do to a young quarterback is to start him in one system and then make a change, because obviously that's just not going to do anybody any favors.
Right, which was what my point was, that if you're going to trade for Garoppolo, you need to make your mind up on Fox's long-term, you know, viability, because to me, he just doesn't seem like a guy that's going to nurture and work with a young quarterback. I don't know who this guy is, but I just don't think he is. Not Fox.
Right. So I guess the question is, the first one is, do you think that they're going to make an addition at quarterback this year?
Yes. I don't think you have a choice, because all indications are you're going to get rid of Cutler, and he might end up in New York with the Jets. And that's another joke, but we'll get into that later. I think the more I've listened to this, Hoyer comes back better, but I think they're going to have to find a young kid to play. It's either you trade for Garoppolo or you draft one. The kid out of Pittsburgh, Peterman, I think is his name, that's the guy that I've seen mentioned with the Bears' third-round pick on several mock drafts. We need Tyler here to get his opinion, but I mean, I think that he's not bad. I mean, he's a project, granted, but, you know, how long have we been waiting for the Bears to take a quarterback in the second, third, or fourth round? Try years.
Right. Well, I think that, because I guess my next question would be is, because I think we agree here. I know I do. I think it sounds like you too. The Bears are not taking a quarterback with the third overall pick.
No, this would be the best defensive player likely, whether that's Garrett, the kid out of A&M, or maybe Allen or a safety or corner, whatever. It's going to be best defensive player.
See, okay, I agree with that. I don't think it's going to be Allen, because I think he's going to be gone. But I agree completely with that. So the next choice is which young quarterback do you want? I mean, because another quarterback I've seen that's getting a lot of mention is the Texas Tech quarterback has really started to shoot up drafts.
See, I don't know. I mean, the only thing I've seen, Blair, is if not going to take one in the first round is the kid Peterman. I haven't really seen anybody else really come out and say they think this is going to be the pick or that's going to be the pick. I mean, that's the only one I've seen. I haven't heard about any other picks. I mean, obviously, what round are they projecting the kid from Texas Tech?
Well, that's the issue, is that the reason that I think he's gotten a lot of press is because there are some scouts that think he's the best quarterback in the class, and then there are some scouts that don't think that, because I think everyone agrees that Trubisky and Watson are going in the first round. And then after that, I still think it's just kind of a toss-up, because it just seems like this year is one of the most confusing quarterback classes, because it just doesn't seem like people can really agree on who's even the best quarterback, let alone where they should go. Because I think if you said that guy's projected to go in the third round, that sounds like a match for the Bears, because from all the mocks I've seen is that Allen has been tied to the Bears a lot, because the argument is that he could be that next piece that they add, because a lot of people like what Goldman's done, and then you have McPhee when he's been healthy. They think that would make give the Bears a really strong front seven, but then I've seen apparently he has shoulder questions, and does he have legal issues?
I don't think so. I think as other people in the Alabama program have legal issues where, but I don't really think it's Allen. Seems to be like a
so
guy
I've
that
seen,
you don't have to worry about.
All the mocks I've seen said it's either Allen or one of the safeties for the Bears, and then several mock drafts I've seen have the Bears taken a corner in the second round because it looks like I think it's a fairly deep secondary class, at least at the top end, and they think it. Mock drafts I've seen, obviously there's like 7,000 of them, think that some of the better corners could slide in the second round and the Bears could potentially get two starters with their first two picks on the defense, and obviously the secondary is just a mess.
What isn't a mess with this team? The guy you're talking about, Blair, from Texas Tech is Pat Mahomes, right?
Yes.
Okay. He's listed. I'm doing a particular website. They got him listed as the third best quarterback in option. That's interesting. Ahead of Watson, they have Deshaun Kizer. I don't know. What do you think about Kizer? But he's listed as the second prospect to go 6'4", 230.
Yeah, I misspoke. Him too. Kizer, Trubisky, and Watson, I think, are all projected to go in the first round. My mistake. Him too. I think that if you would ask me, I think that Kizer is, in my opinion, the best or the most talented quarterback. However, I think when you look at Watson and Trubisky, if you'd group those three together, I think Kizer is also the biggest project because he didn't get a bunch of time at Notre Dame. And I think this last year when he was a full-time starter, well, he wasn't even full-time starter because he had the issue with that, was it that Zaire kid? So they did some subbing there a little bit. I think he is potentially has the best tools because he's big, he's strong, he's athletic. I'm not a huge fan of Watson. He just seems like a quarterback that I don't think is going to make it. But a lot of people point to the fact that he produces, he plays his best in big time games. So he's got that clutch factor, which I guess is a thing you want to look at. Trubisky, I think, is probably the safest of those three. But a lot of people say even he's probably a project.
No, I don't. They're look, I mean, the logic behind and what's going to enhance Romo's value and also Garoppolo's value, where the simple fact that this draft class is not that good.
No, it's not.
Watson is listed as a fourth choice. I like him, and I know this is kind of a ridiculous thought, but let me throw it out anyway, thinking what you've seen. What Dallas did with a rookie quarterback, does that intrigue you with Watson at all?
I mean, yes, because, again, a lot of people point to the fact that he plays his best when the lights are brightest, which I don't think you can snuff at. That's obviously something that's a factor. I don't see the Bears taking a quarterback in the first round, and I think that those three guys, Kizer, Trubisky, and Watson, are for sure gone in the first round.
I would have to, if Deshaun Watson's sitting there, Blair, and I'm at my second pick, I'd have to think about taking him. Maybe even.
I don't have a huge issue with that. If he's in the second round, then I'm not going to, that's probably a smart pick.
Maybe
if they're sold on it.
Right, maybe Kizer, too. If those two guys are sitting there at the second pick, I take him. But the guy, they've got a kid named Davis Webb out of California. But, I don't know. And then a guy I was hearing last year, Brad Kaye, a quarterback out of Miami, but says there one general manager of a playoff team says he's got him as a fifth round pick. Nobody really knows. Nate Peterman's the guy that I've heard quite a bit to see how the Bears taken in the third round. He doesn't really do anything for me. I'd have to take a look at Joshua Dobbs of Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
63% completion. He's 2,946 yards, 27 touchdowns, 12 picks. He had 10 rushing touchdowns. I really don't know. I mean, what about Chad Kelly? I mean, does that interest you at all from Ole Miss?
I think
if you get him in the latter part of the draft, which you can.
I mean, I don't particularly care for him. I think he's talented. Let me clarify my thoughts here. I don't particularly care for him as a person. Let me clarify that it's not a comment on his talent. I think he has maturity issues. I don't know. I think you and I are in the same boat. I think at this point, if the Bears find a quarterback they like, and I hope that, because if they're not taking one of the top three, and I'm pretty sure they're going to be gone in the first round, I hope they're really scouting all the quarterbacks behind that, because I think, I don't know what round it is, but the quarterback, I think the Bears are going to end up taking a quarterback, what do you think, within the first four rounds? First five for sure?
If they don't, if they do not take a quarterback by the fourth round, then I'd have to think that the Bears completely are just have no damn clue what they're doing. There was another statement attributed, I think it was George McCaskey talking about how well he was lauding, or no, it wasn't McCaskey, it was who's the business idiot?
Yes. I know who you're talking about. I can't think of his name. Crane Kinney.
No, that's the Cubs. I'm talking about the Bears.
I know, I'm saying the Crane Kinney of the Bears.
Yeah, though. He was talking about how good of a job that Pace and Pace has done in the front office and Fox. I'm like, you guys are idiots. Ted Phillips. If the Bears do not take a quarterback by the fourth round, then they're really not serious about doing anything other than screwing Bears fans out of money. Because you cannot continue to... I think they're done with Cutler, because I think you got to the point you cut him, you're going to get the most benefit of since you've signed the contract. You could bring Hoyer back, but don't delude yourself into thinking he could be our starter, because that sounds like Cleveland Browns thinking. And that's not exactly something you want next to your franchise name, that, hey, we're on board with Brian Hoyer like Cleveland was on board with, you know, whoever. It's moronic. McCown is when they thought when Cleveland signed with McCown, and thinking this just proves how stupid you are. The Bears don't take somebody by the third or fourth, and they're just not serious about doing anything this year. They got a quarterback that I think they could probably get on the field at the latest, but if not this year, next year then.
Right. So let me throw two scenarios at you here, Pops. One, and I haven't seen a lot of suggestions of this, and if they do, I would understand. But I think the thought process is that there's a lot of top-end defensive talent, and they're going to go that way. But do you see the Bears trading down, especially because a lot of reports are San Francisco might, but Cleveland, I don't think. A lot of people are pretty set that they're going to take Garrett. San Diego, a lot of people pretty sure they're going to take not a quarterback. So let's say for some reason San Francisco doesn't take a quarterback at number two either. So do you think that the Bears could potentially trade down if no quarterback goes off the board by the time they pick third?
I would do it. I have no clue what Pace would do. I mean, you'd have to think that it would make the most sense, because you need a lot of picks. I mean, I'd be a little bit disappointed in you don't do that, Blair, but the one thing that I think you could talk about the Bears GM since Jerry Angelo, no really creativity, none. I mean, they can't think outside of the box. They can't realize there's an opportunity to take advantage of a situation that's fluid and to trade up or trade down in order to get a player falling, or if a player is falling, to trade down to get somebody to say, hey, you might want to take this guy. I mean, I'd like to see it. I have no clue if Pace will do it.
So you say it verbatim that you want to see him trade down regardless?
No, I'm saying if the opportunity presents itself, you have to do it. I mean, that's what I'm saying. In a fluid situation, and the draft is a fluid situation, if it always went the way you thought, then we wouldn't watch it, right?
Right.
Okay. If your scenario happens, the Bears have to seriously consider trading down and, in essence, trying to auction that pick to whoever wants the quarterback, saying, quarterback, top quarterback still on the board. Somebody who wants this. The Bears for GM since Jerry Angelo are just not that creative. I have no idea. I'd like to think that Pace would realize a chance to garner more draft picks. However, I don't know.
Okay, here's another scenario for you. So let's say they take the best available defensive player at three, and then let's say those quarterbacks continue to slide. Do you see the Bears, because obviously that second round pick at 35 is a pretty good pick, potentially trading back up to maybe the teens or early 20s to grab one of those guys? Do you have a problem with that? Say a Kaiser or a Watson Falls?
No, it's the same thinking. As I said, is it that you trade up when a player is falling and you could use him, or you trade down when a player is falling and you auction a pick? You got to be creative. I mean, I know this is a copycat league, and you can't go out and get a Bill Belichick clone, but just watch what he does in the draft. He trades up, trades down. And there's a reason. He gets what he wants, or he gets more picks. Seems to make sense, doesn't it?
I mean, yes. I agree. It should be a fluid situation. I think with the depth of talent there is defensively in this draft, that I think if the Bears could find a way to slide down into the middle of the first round, I think it would be extremely beneficial, obviously, to get more picks, because it seems like defensively it's a pretty deep draft.
Right. And I think that's what I'm saying. In a fluid situation, you got to be able to carpe diem, seize the moment, either trade up, trade down. I'd like to think they do that. However, again, I just don't know how creative Pace is, Blair. So I would. I don't know if Pace would, and to answer your question.
We're in agreement that, because we talked about this, so I suppose I'm going to track back a smidge here. We're in agreement. We're pretty sure the Patriots are trading Grapple Hook, right?
Oh, I think it's definite. I think there's enough teams where in the NFL looking for quarterbacks that they're going to get a first-round pick out of that, because the Patriots will set the floor. And with Trubisky or whoever being the number one option in the draft, and nobody really having any consensus that he is the best quarterback, you're looking at a situation like what we saw last year, where the Rams deluded themselves into thinking Goff was the number one pick, and where the hell are the Rams at right now? So yes, Garoppolo's played two games, which I granted is not a lot, but you could at least say he has some tape versus Trubisky hasn't. So if he wants to trade him, I mean, he might want to keep him, but I doubt it. If he wants to trade him, Blair, Belichick will get another number one pick.
Yeah, I think so too, because I think that a lot of people are talking about how long can Brady play, et cetera, et cetera. If he's the guy, then why would you trade him? But we talked about this last season, because I know Tyler was really high. The guy they had third on the depth chart, I know, was a lot of people had high opinions of him. Of course, the Patriots got him. So I think when people argue against trading Grapple Hook, they forget about that kid who played a game and I think put some decent tape together himself. I can't remember his name. But you know what I'm talking about? The NC State kid?
Brissett?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, you could go either way, but I think at this point, Brissett's more of a project. So I think they'd like to have more time to work with him, and Garoppolo played fairly well in his two short games, but it's possible where they hold Garoppolo thinking, well, maybe he is that good, and maybe he can just continue this thing going with New England. I've heard Gronkowski's name possibly being bandied about, too. Would that surprise you?
I've heard that, too. Not really, because, I mean, talented or not, obviously Belichick operates things like a business, and the most talented player is irrelevant if he can't stay on the field. I've heard the same thing.
So that wouldn't surprise me. So, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the people that argue for Grapple Hook, the thing that's not talked about, obviously, is what you talked about with the Bears, is that if they do keep him, as opposed to getting arguably probably a first-round pick, if not several early-round picks, then you turn right around, and if you got to keep him, then you got to sign him. And it just, I think it comes down to, regardless of how good you think Grapple Hook is, do you think Brady's going to play more than one season?
Yes.
Because then you got to manage the cap, obviously, and you're going to have to pay him when he becomes a free agent.
And right. So that'd be the year now to move him this year, because Brissett's still under his rookie deal. So, you know, you move Bruce Garoppolo, get another young kid that goes under the rookie contract. Brissett's under his rookie contract. That's so Belichick. It just amazes me that other teams don't. I know I can't go and plug my finger into Belichick's ear and to get some ideas flowing from his mind to my finger to my brain. You know what I mean? But why doesn't teams emulate his thinking as to when you trade guys and when you don't? And that amazes me. I mean, it's like everybody, and I know the human ego being as it is, everybody thinks that they've got a new way to do things. We saw that with Phil Embry, thinking he wanted to go against the grain, and he ended up fooling himself. But you would think it'd be simpler than what it is, at least that part, and it just isn't.
Okay, let's talk NBA here. We're in the All-Star break, obviously. I think starting in the East, obviously, Kevin Love's hurt out, 4 to 6 weeks with his knee scope. I know it's a big topic with the trade deadline coming up, because Toronto made a trade for Ibaka. The Celtics have a bevy of picks and young players. I don't think, obviously, this changes the fact that the Cavaliers are probably going to go to the finals minus other injuries, but do you think we could see a little bit of a run here where maybe somebody knocks Cleveland off the one seed? Because I think last I checked, they're only like two and a half games up in the conference for the
three games
up.
Boston, I suppose, where, but Washington is like third. They got hot. I don't think that's sustainable. I'm not for sure what Ibaka does for Toronto. I don't think that's as big of a deal as people want to make it out to. I guess Boston can, as everybody was predicting that, but I think that I don't know. I think Cleveland will figure out a way to hold on, because at some point J.R. Smith should be coming back, right?
At some point.
I think that it's going to be close. I think Cleveland will figure out. The only problem is, the only way I think it could happen is if you decide to start resting LeBron, which you really haven't because he's playing over 40 minutes a game. But at some point, you're going to have to start resting him because that's what you did last year.
Right.
Cleveland does not need the number one seed in the East to get out of the East. I would think anybody else does.
Do you think we'll see a big trade? I know that, obviously, we talked last week about the Knicks. Isaiah Thomas having a monster year, obviously, but even still, they're kind of him, and then there's some talent on that team, but they're just a lot of, I don't want to say role players, I don't think they're all role players, but kind of a lot of role players. They've seemed like they've been perpetually waiting for a trade to find another superstar, and they have the assets to do it because they have a bevy of young talent. They have the Nets pick, which is going to be like a top three pick this year. But, I mean, do you think we'll actually see a trade of note this trade deadline?
No. Because I don't think Anthony's leaving the Knicks. I think he's hell-bent on telling Phil to go screw himself, despite Phil's efforts to basically torpedo his own ship and get Carmelo pissed enough to say, I'll waive my trade clause. I think Carmelo's going to stay there, so you're going to have to listen to, like, I don't know how many more months of that crap. Beyond that, but I don't know who's going to be moved that's going to be a noticeable piece. So I think that while Boston has everything you said, they don't want Anthony, even for, I think, probably obvious reasons. He would screw up with the chemistry of that team. I think the only way that the Boston, I think, makes an addition that's going to help them win is probably going to be an offseason.
What's going on out west? What are the standings out west?
Golden State 47-19, San Antonio 43-13, four games out. Your favorite team, Houston, 40-18, eight games out. And the Clippers 35-21, 12 games out, with Utah a half game behind them for the fourth seed. So, and Memphis is two games behind the Clippers for the fourth seed. Oklahoma City is 3.5 behind. So the real race is between 4, 5, 6, and 7 as to which team gets the home court for the first round.
Okay. We haven't talked about them. I poo-pooed on them early. Houston's chances of making noise this year, Pops. What do you got?
Well, they're making noise. I mean,
in the playoffs. Regular season's great, but obviously it all comes down to the postseason.
At this point, Blair, they're set up to play San Antonio in the second round.
That's not
friendly. I can't imagine San Antonio is going to have another clunker of a playoff run like they did last year. I mean, I really can't fathom that. However, who knows? But I don't see that. No, because they don't play defense. And let's face it, you're going to have to play defense in the postseason to win. D'Antonio's team doesn't play defense. So therefore, he's not Mike D'Antonio. He's Mike Antonio.
Right.
And Houston doesn't play defense. Irrespective of what stats say, they just managed to chuck a lot of shots up. And, you know, it's a nice story for a team, at least for Houston, bouncing back. However, I'd be damn surprised if it'd be San Antonio, but I think they're out in the second round.
So what you're telling me is that we're going to see San Antonio and Golden State again.
Yes.
How do you feel about that?
Unless Golden State helps San Antonio, where with not playing defense or lack of chemistry, or Draymond Green pissing somebody off, or getting thrown out of or getting suspended for a game because he has X amount of technicals, I think Golden State wins that.
Is there a matchup in the second round in either conference that's interesting to you? You talked about the race for home court in the first round in the West.
I'm sure people, if the Clippers get to play Golden State in the second round, they'll be yakking about that. It has nothing to do with anything. But Utah playing Golden State would be interesting. It's a good young team in Utah. You get a chance to go watch them, go see them. I'm guessing, Blair, people be hoping for Oklahoma City to be the four and get to the second round. However, they haven't got close when they played Golden State.
Right.
The only thing would be Houston and San Antonio, just to see, is San Antonio still kind of going through post Tim Duncan and how things were last year, or are they a serious title contender? That's really about the only thing I think is worth watching the second round. I don't know if you've seen it, but Kawhi Leonard has just, his scoring has gone up another level. Now, I know they don't necessarily have the depth of scoring, but I think San Antonio is a better defensive team, and I think that's probably a six-game series, I think, between San Antonio and Golden State.
Telling you, they nailed that one. I've been a big fan of that guy. I know that LeBron's been upset because a lot of people have said that he's said Kawhi Leonard is the best all-around player at his position. But it seems that every season, it seems like that kid takes another step forward.
Larry, I got news for you. LeBron seems to be mad at everybody this year.
That's true. He does seem to be mad at everybody.
Yes. I don't know if he said anything about to you, but I think if I said I sided with Barkley, so I'm waiting for me to be in a tweet about tell me to shut up or maybe something personal against me. I don't know.
One last NBA question here for you, Pops, before we get to the beef here real fast. Obviously, I think when it comes to the three Gunthers, you are lowest on Butler. Now, that's not to say you don't think he's talented, obviously. I don't want people thinking that, but I think you're lowest on him in terms of what he is. But obviously, our front office is just god-awful, but apparently they're going to be coming to a decision soon on whether he's a player to build around or not. So in a vacuum, is Butler a team you think that you could build a winner around?
You mean is Butler a player that I think you could build a team around?
Yes. Sorry. Yes.
I suppose you probably could, Blair. The problem is you'd have to get Butler, and I think it'd take the right coach. And I don't think we.
Right.
Thibodeau, yeah, maybe. Hoiberg ain't it. But it doesn't matter what you build in Chicago, whether you keep Butler or you don't. The two idiots that are making these decisions can no longer make decisions because they continue to screw stuff up. There's two decisions that it seems like the Paxton/Foreman regime has gotten right. The first was the ping pong ball to get Derrick Rose. The other one was to draft Jimmy Butler, number 21, out of Marquette. Other than that, you've gotten everything wrong. And
I think you could you'd probably put an asterisk on that too, right? Because they drafted him, but obviously, and this is something I don't feel like it's talked about enough because it seems like the NBA, and I don't mean to take a crap on stars, but Dwight Howard's my biggest example. Butler made himself what he is because he wasn't this when they drafted him.
No, I think you could, Blair, but I think you're going to have to pair him with the right coach. And I think it's going to be a veteran, even more so than Thibodeau. It's going to be a veteran coach that has the track record of winning, and I don't know who that is, but I think outside of that, Butler's just going to say, screw you, I'm doing my own thing. And he is the only piece that the Bulls could trade to get some draft picks out of. But again, it doesn't matter what you get. They could have the number one draft pick for the next 10 years. Foreman and Paxton would likely screw it up.
Right. Watch out on, I don't know how much trash this is, but Paul George is mad at the Pacers. I know that more often than not, you don't see big fish jumping in free agency, but he's kind of upset about not doing anything. So that's, I think, something to watch, especially because is he an L.A. kid?
I don't
know. He was at Fresno, right? I think he's an L.A. kid.
I don't know.
Just saying. Something to keep an eye on.
Okay.
All right, let's wrap this up. I don't know if you have any saved left, Pops, because you went after a ton of people last week, but it's our last little segment where we get to vent. Didn't do really a whole lot of venting this podcast, but it's We Got Beef.
Where's the beef?
Got anything for us this week, Pops?
Yeah, this is not good news, Blair, because this team doesn't need help in screwing stuff up. In Illinois, there's legislation that's pending that's called the Illinois Workers' Compensation Bill. And then this bill, which is supported by the McCaskies.
Of course.
Surprisingly. Because they seem to know what they're doing at football, right? Is that it would deprive injured workers, including professional athletes, of health care beginning at the age of 35. So the head, Damora Smith, the head of the NFL Players Association, is doing what right now? Telling NFL free agents you might not want to sign with the Bears. Oh, good. That means we can rely upon the draft, right? We know how well that's gone. I mean, does the Bears need any more freaking handicaps than what they have now? They already have the McCaskies as the owner, and now they have Phillips is the president. You could debate whether Blair about Ryan Pace. Frankly, I think he's hitting about 500 in the draft, maybe. And I don't know. And I'm not crazy about Fox. This team doesn't need any more disadvantages. They've got that. This hurts them because I don't know. And of course, it's because the McCaskies have so much money and they wouldn't have to spend so much. They're supporting this goddamn bill. Pardon my French. But they're the only team that's being linked. I don't see the Blackhawks being linked. I don't see the Cubs being linked or the Bulls being linked. Just football players.
Right.
And somehow how this is being attributed only to the NFL. This is not good news for a team that has $55 million to spend and could be upwards of 70 if they let Cutler go. Could things only get worse for this? I mean, why do you root for this team?
Yeah. Well, do you think this is something that could be defeated? Because obviously we've seen a lot in recent years of the major sports throwing around their financial power. The North Carolina bathroom bill, which I still don't think has been defeated, comes to mind, of the NBA moving the All-Star game. And then you had that Arizona bill a couple years ago. And what is it? I think baseball. Was there somebody else that released a statement? Baseball for sure released a statement.
I got news for you. Texas is taking a look at another bathroom bill, too, something close to the, I think, North Carolina bill. So, I mean, just legislatures have proven, boy, that stupidity just doesn't run in Washington. It runs in the state houses, too. I have no clue if this gets passed or not in Illinois. The simple fact it's being mentioned is not good news, because if this is probably a conservative measure, because the conservatives are wanting to go out and make more money because they don't have enough, Illinois likely won't be the first state or the only state to where this gets thrown around and possibly gets passed. It's going to be right. Other states are going to see this. But do I have any inkling if it's going to pass in Illinois? I don't really know. But it's not good news, at least from the sports teams, because, again, I mean, it's just players are playing longer. Certainly in football, you know about injuries. It's just, this team does not need any more bad press. I mean, what else are we going to say? They're siding with Putin? The Bears have a bunch of aliens playing for them, and then the INS is going to come in and deport them and take half their team. What else do you want to say that's bad about this team?
Right. It's surprising that it's Illinois, right? Illinois is a blue state, so you wouldn't think a measure like this would gain traction there.
Well, that would say the conservatives at least have got some people's interest. I don't know. I don't know nowadays, to be honest with you. I mean, you got Trump going after one of the tenets of our democracy, Blair, which is the media. And basically, now he's calling enemies of the state, which is like, no, sorry. Go west, or go east, you idiot, to Russia or China. They're not the enemy of the states. I mean, it's hard to be surprised nowadays. Nothing surprising, to be honest with you, the way things are going.
Yeah. That's good beef. I'm glad you brought that up. It's a good topical issue. I forgot about it. It's a good one to have. Well, keep an eye on the blog. Pops has started the fantasy baseball previews. We got catcher up last week. I'm assuming first base is next.
You should have it within a day or so.
So you will see that as we get ready. Pops is going position by position, and then you're doing your mock draft thing. What's after the positions? You told me, but I forgot.
Well, the next will be second base, or what are you asking?
No, I mean after you do the positions. Didn't you say there's something after that?
We'll see. It's possible that I do my mock of the mock draft to tell you where I think you should take players in order to have the best team. So, yeah, that'd be the caboose on this whole thing, or the cherry on top of the sundae.
Got it. So check those out. Of course, Pops is still wrapping up the starting five, the add ones for basketball, so keep an eye on the blog for those. Thank you to our on-site producer, Rick Mason. We're in partnership with My Retro Radio. It's a Brushback Pitches podcast presented by 3 Sports Guns and 2 Gunthers. Blair,
Harold,
catch you next week.
Join us next time for the Brushback Pitches. Find us online at 3sportsguns.com. That's the number 3sportsguns.com. This has been a Gunther Sports and Entertainment production in association with My Retro Radio.